Well, all right. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Joshua and Aaron Brookshire, the Bookhouse Boys, two creative, young, Southern, free-thinking people that I happen to like quite a bit. I do have another guest tonight, since I could only do an hour with my other friends. And you all know and love Vinnie Eastwood. Welcome to the bridge.
Hey, Kira. It's nice to be on here again.
Thanks for joining me. I know you've been having some troubles of late with YouTube, along with a lot of other people. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell everybody what's going on.
Well, first of all, the people who think it's a problem with YouTube probably didn't read my post fully or at all, because ultimately YouTube has very little, if anything, to do with the thing going down. So what happened was I interviewed Jordan Maxwell and Santos Bonacci earlier this year, and they were exposing Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, unbeknownst to me, Jordan Maxwell had apparently been, shall we say, signed a contract, signing over all his previous work and all future work to a guy named Joseph Dolezal. And what this dude is doing now is going across, or at least what appears to be doing, is looking around for any successful Jordan Maxwell stuff that he hasn't already stolen, and demanding that it be removed because of copyright violation, because he allegedly holds the copyright. I haven't seen the documents. I haven't spoken with Jordan about this, so it's kind of a little bit of hearsay at this point. What is not hearsay, though, is that this Jehovah's Witnesses exposed video had like 50,000 hits, was producing a maybe about 9% of my Google ad revenue for the month, so it's hit me a little bit. And it's mostly just a moral thing. If you own somebody, that's called a slave, right? So what's different if somebody signs a contract and you own the copyright to own everything they have ever done or ever will do, whether or not they like it? Does that seem immoral to you? It does to me. And the fact that Jordan's one of the elders of the truth movement and has produced so much work and done so much over the years and been more or less one of the great pillars of the expansion of the de-occulting of the occult to a large degree, I could never feasibly think of a justification to do this to him or even anybody else in this movement. And I've been asking people to email Joseph Dolezal at helpjordanmaxwell@gmail.com and send him a polite message to stop what he's doing to Jordan, to give him back his life, and to leave him alone. And never do this to anybody again. It is cruel. It is inhuman. It is wrong. And it should be stopped as at the earliest opportunity. I don't know what kind of pressure needs to be applied. I don't know the legality of the case in particular. But I do know that that was a really, really big video. And that I recorded it. Santos was there. We recorded it on Skype. We produced it. I put all the work in. I posted the archives and everything. How could somebody else own an episode of my show on copyright?
That's insane.
Yeah. Which, and because it's insane, that leads me to believe that it's probably legal.
Right. Yeah, we definitely falls under the category of scumbaggery for sure.
Yeah, there's, contrary to popular belief, Scumbaggery is actually a very serious charge. And it's, I do think people aren't taking it seriously enough in some cases. But moving on from Jordan, this seems to be a symptom. Now, we were talking on the United We Strike broadcast just minutes ago, and American Freedom Radio is now broadcasting the United We Strike marathon as well. So there's two types of elements that I kind of think need to be discussed. One is the importance of collaboration within the truth movement, people helping each other, just not because they have anything to gain in particular, but just because they have some sort of a moral duty to do so. You know, if a whistleblower is getting shafted or something like that, you kind of owe it to them, having put themselves on the line, to stick up for them a little bit. Because if nobody sticks up for them, who's going to stick up for you when the time was right, you know? Like in New Zealand, for instance, we have John Campbell, who's probably one of the most award-winning journalists in New Zealand history. His show Campbell Live is being pulled, possibly, very, very shortly, allegedly because he has been too critical of the government, according to some media commentators. And to me, this is quite striking, because the job of the media, like if you were really to compress the fourth estate, is to hold the powerful and the government to account and shine the light of day on them so as to keep the public informed. And he's been doing a rather good job of that. I'll admit I'm nothing like him. And so I'm sticking up for him, despite the fact that he's mainstream media, despite the fact that I disagree with virtually everything his show covers, because I know that it's a freedom of speech thing. Okay? Now, if you start censoring the freedom of speech of people you disagree with, then you're basically stopping your own ability to disagree with anybody. Okay? That's where it leads, isn't it?
Absolutely.
If he can't criticize somebody that I like, and that means I can't criticize anybody I don't like either, okay? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. So it doesn't matter that he's a shill to a degree. It doesn't matter that he thinks 9/11 was the fault exclusively of 19 hijackers. It doesn't matter that he doesn't think Building 7 exists. You know, that doesn't really matter, because if you don't let people say whatever the hell they want to say without the consequence of them saying things, unless it's like defamatory or actually like under the law illegal sort of thing, or just blatant lies, then, you know, ultimately you're the one who's going to be in the firing line next, I believe.
So you're sticking up for him even though you don't necessarily agree with them, because the long-term effect of saying nothing is that we all lose.
Well, and also the people that they're going to be replacing them with is like soap operas or comedy news sort of thing. You know how you have like silly news that's like just kind of like nonsense? It's not actually journalism. It's just a bunch of douchebags commenting on stuff and making jokes about it sort of thing. It entertains people, but it doesn't really inform them. I kind of try to be the bridge between that gap, where you give you information with a little bit of crappy jokes in order to make the information more digestible. You know, every fried chip needs a bit of sauce.
Right. So you really think that people writing letters, like a letter writing campaign, is going to be effective in this situation? Because it seems like maybe YouTube has their hands tied, or...
Well, it works like this. You have one chance to appeal. Okay, so I have since YouTube the counterclaim, I think it's called, a counterclaim form, and informed them and showed and gave them the link to the actual radio blog page. where I posted the original audio recording of the interview and said that this is the exact thing that the video was made of, and it's published on my site independently, and so therefore I hold the copyright to the show, not this guy, because I created it, not him. Now, he may be able to provide, this is all speculative at this point. Let's say there's two options. Number one, YouTube upholds my complaint, they restore the video. There also might be some consequences for Joseph Dolezal as well, where if you file false copyright complaints against people and their counterclaims are successfully upheld, you can experience consequences by having your channel banned and having your email banned from ever making another YouTube account. So I'm hoping that that might be one of the consequences that this man faces. But I'd rather it not come to that. I'd rather he just withdraw his complaint, let me have the video back, and give Jordan's work back to him. Or just at the very least, stop doing what he's doing in terms of trying to claim copyright over Jordan's new stuff. Just let him start again. But yeah, I don't know what's really going to happen there on that front. Now, the other possibility, and this one I'm kind of a little bit uneasy about, is what if he does have a document that will legally prove that he owns the copyright to that episode of my show because Jordan's in it and Jordan signed the contract. If you file a false counterclaim, your YouTube channel can be banned. So I'm filing a counterclaim against this guy who I believe filed a false claim, but if he actually proves and has documents that his claim is technically legal, immoral or not, I could have my entire YouTube channel banned, not just that one video. So we're talking about 3,000 videos, nearly 20,000 subscribers, 4+ million hits, and I'm the most subscribed YouTube channel in New Zealand that produces news. The second runner-up being the largest newspaper in the country called the New Zealand Herald, who have the YouTube channel, the New Zealand Herald TV. They have about maybe 10 or 11,000 subscribers or something like that. So I've nearly doubled them. That's kind of my goal, to be twice as many subscribers as the mainstream media channels here in New Zealand. Or at the very least, have so many subscribers on my one channel that it is more than all of the mainstream media YouTube channel variants in New Zealand combined. That's my goal. And so far I'm succeeding by myself. So if my YouTube channel gets pulled over this, that's...
What would you do?
I'd be totally screwed, man. Last time it happened, I'd made a six-minute video about the Prime Minister, John Key, and what his past was, and we've received a lot of complaints about that, and they took down not just that video, but my entire channel 2 weeks before the 2014 election was about to wrap up. And that video was starting to go viral. I had 7,000 hits in 7 days. And I just checked the Facebook shares on a version, one of my listeners, not even me, not even with my reach or anything like that. This is just one of my random listeners with only a few friends or anything like that. He took the liberty of downloading my video and uploading it to Facebook for me, and it had something like 14,000 shares or something like that, 14,000 Facebook shares. So that video made a really, really big impact, and my channel was taken down for a full 2 months in the height of the election. And guess what day it was restored on? The 5th of November. It was like Vinny for Vendetta. Yeah, I was great. But that's the day that I decided that I'm not going to be doing my YouTube channels for free anymore. I'm going to put the Google ads and stuff on them. They're still skippable, of course. So you only have to deal with 5 seconds of them or whatever. So that way I can at least get some benefit from making all of these videos of all of these activists and all of these interviews with people of all these different professionals from all over the world. I was getting nothing for that. No ad revenue, very few donations. I mean, I've been able to survive on donations to a large part, but it's just, as the New World Order closes in, things get more expensive. So I justified the fact that I do way, 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 way more work than anybody in this country, at least, to produce video content that informs and helps people. So if people have to sit through 5 seconds of an ad before watching said video, and if that generates maybe, like, I don't know, a week's worth of rent every month out of it, why shouldn't I do it? You know, I think it's perfectly justifiable. And the only reason I did that, of course, was after having my entire YouTube channel deleted for 2 months. So I lost 2 months worth of traction.
Yeah.
Did I do the wrong thing? Did I do the wrong thing? I don't think so.
No, and you're working. So there should be a way for you to be compensated for your work. And it's up to you how you work that and how you do that. That's totally up to you. It's your work.
Yeah, I think it's just so long as you don't hurt anybody or deceive people, you should be able to make money in any way you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your philosophy, because you seem to, you know, you seem to just want to get information out there, talk to a lot of different kinds of people, and you don't necessarily endorse all of your guests just because you have them on. It seems like you just want your listeners to decide for themselves. Is that accurate assessment?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and my show sort of comes with a warning label like that, which is ironic because every show, don't you think, should have a warning label like that? Warning, this person may not be 100% credible, and don't assume that because I've had them on my show that I agree with absolutely everything they've ever said or ever will say till the end of time. But, you know, it's like you get criticized in this business for doing it. You know, I mean, if people who don't have radio shows, don't make videos, don't write books, don't blog, don't have websites, aren't calling you a shill, making all sorts of accusations based on hearsay and zero documented evidence, then you're probably just doing something wrong, bro. Yeah, and so I get that quite a lot, and I've kind of come to deal with it. And when you're dealing with people who don't even know, like, that's just the informed people who already know a whole bunch of about conspiracy and then assume that you're part of it because you're talking about it. You know, it's just the jump of logic there. I'm still trying to process. sometimes it just pisses me off, right, when I talk about some form of scumbaggery that I've only reached a conclusion on after 6 or so years of research, and then someone asks me to, like, show them all the proof in 5 minutes. Mind you, proof that they don't want to look at. Like, look, bro, if you really want to know the truth, it'll take you a while. You can't just listen to one show and then expect that you've got it all down. I mean, if this is some sort of flippant attempt, you'll never learn from it, okay? You have to be extremely determined and committed. Otherwise, you'll never break free of your mental prison. That's essentially what I'm talking about here, is that you do have to do all of your own research and all of your own work and not trust people as authorities, because ultimately appealing to authority specifically for your information inherently leads you into trouble. It's only through having an informed, critical thinking public that you can really achieve something worthwhile, something with longevity. you know, and the point of my show isn't necessarily to give people all this credible information that they can take to their Congress people and all of that kind of stuff. You know, my show isn't for the uninitiated. It's mostly for people who've sort of heard a bit about it before, maybe have listened to that particular guest before, but want to have a look from a different perspective. You see what I'm saying? And I think, well, thing is, I'm not trying to wake people up, okay? Personally, I don't believe you can wake somebody up, in inverted commas, because I know how I woke up. I started watching documentaries. I started listening to radio shows, and I was doing it so much and covering so many topics that I woke up. Nobody forced me. Nobody put a gun to my head and said, Vinny, okay, now it's time to wake up. You have to sit here and watch two documentaries a day for 6 months and listen to a repeat of the Alex Jones Show every other day. Okay? Nobody forced me to do that. I wanted to do that. I was passionate. I was really, really inspired to know more about the world. Once that period was over, I decided that I knew enough, that I didn't have to sit and keep listening anymore. I decided that it was now time to spring into action. Sure, I stumbled. Sure, I may have done a few things that I regret. But the thing I don't regret is turning off all the radio shows, all the documentaries, stop reading the articles, stop watching the news, and start creating them. Instead, I don't regret that. And that's what I hope to do, is inspire others to stop being a consumer and start being a creator. The consumers will consume until there's nothing left to consume. You ever tried to go and watch a television series online and you've got access to all of the seasons and everything, and then you get to the very end and they haven't made the next episode yet, and you kind of feel like stuck because you can't do anything, you can't continue the story? That's sort of what it's like. People will sit for years and years watching documentaries and YouTube videos and listening to talk radio and never having created one, never started their own protest, never gone into their local representative's office with a camera and start giving them some tough questions and upload it to YouTube. They've never edited a video. They've never recorded a show. They've never even started. They haven't written a script. They haven't done a website. These are the things that this new media game is providing us with the use of the internet. And I think that, you know, if you've got the skills, go ahead and do it. However, I think that he who has the ability has the responsibility. For example, myself. Well, let me read something for you. What is the point of the Vinny Eastwood Show if not to wake people up with credible information? Here's the point. To have fun, because researching this stuff will drive you nuts if you can't laugh about it. There's plenty of good stuff to learn about, but it's underlined by the fact that it's meant to be amusing and provide stress relief while talking about the same stuff everyone else talks about and normally listens to from other sources anyway. Plus, a little bit of the stuff no one talks about, because it's kind of like too far out. It sounds too crazy from the outset, you know? Now, I'm not trying to deceive anyone. Just keep them sane, you know. I'm the source you kind of come across once you've already gotten over the whole InfoWars and coast-to-coast talk radio, which is extremely good, but often traumatic to listen to. I've had many of the same guests they do, but a far more relaxed interview environment, which allows them to open up a lot more. Now, no one has to listen to my show. No one has to donate to support me. No one gets chain emails every day. It's free to all and costs no one unless they want it to. And there's no taboo topics. So everything is fair game. Now, if a guest is full of crap, then they get given enough rope to hang themselves. But if they're for real, they're given enough space to tell their story and present the evidence. that's why my show is not for the uninitiated, because you need to have media literacy, which is not taught in schools or encouraged by mainstream media. My work in terms of specifically here in New Zealand is more like a volunteer community service, really, for all those activists who don't have publicists or radio shows or the ability to record or edit videos and audio. I'm there to do the work for them. Many of which have told me afterwards that they were about to go completely insane or might have even become suicidal if I hadn't sat down with them for a number of hours to talk with and then do all the publishing work for them. Now, it's a service I don't charge for, and I don't expect to be thanked or rewarded for it either. I consider it a duty to humanity, and it's a burden I will gladly bear if it makes a positive difference in even one honourable activist's life or inspires one ordinary person to get active.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. It's there is a certain lack of discernment, I think. And I like your calling it uninitiated, because that's good. People need to, for instance, if someone's full of shit, just check out another show, because there's hundreds more. You know, if you get turned off by what one guest says, go check out another one. And that's going to happen. And it's a risk you take when you set up an interview. The person might be full of shit.
Yeah.
It happens.
People don't realize this, that the reason why you listen to a radio show host's particular broadcast is not because all the guests they have are credible, but because you trust the radio show host. You trust them to be honest. Okay, so I find it very ironic when somebody will listen to me for, let's say, 5 years of radio broadcasts, comprising of between 5 and 10 guests a week, give or take, for at least 40 weeks out of the year, and then I interview one person who they don't like, who says something that I never agreed with on radio, and then says I'm a shill and I will never listen to you again.
Pretty extreme reaction.
These are often the people who say, Vinny, I love you, I support you, and do everything you do. So the people who actually think that you're one of their friends, that they know you because they listen to you, no. Okay? I'm not trying to be elitist or anything here. It's about personal contact. You need to be speaking with a person and actually have your minds meet. You need to be shaking hands, hugging, hanging around the fireplace, having a few drinks in the middle of the night, talking about all sorts of BS before you can really consider somebody a friend, in my book. And that's it's a pretty high threshold, you know, when you think about it. but I think people have kind of got the soap opera disease, where they think that what's happening on the screen in front of them is more important than their life. And so they stop living their life and start living vicariously through the lives of others. And I think that's an inherently bad waste of your time. And I recommend on my show that you should turn it off. You should turn off everybody's shows and start creating your own content, and you'll cross the Rubicon once you realize that you're spending more hours per day creating your own thing than absorbing or consuming somebody else's creation. Now, when I talk about creation, the reason why I use such a generalized term like that is because people's creativity is very dynamic. Now, I'm extremely creative. I'm not Superman, but if I wanted to, I could write a script tonight. And it seems that people think, oh, I can't be a radio show host. You know, like they don't have the gift of the gab. They can't talk a million miles a minute. They can't speak for 2 hours on the fly with no preparation, without pause, without delay, and produce a beautiful radio show like I can. A lot of people with their radio shows, they have to work really hard. You know, they actually have to practice. They have to do research, preparation, backup questions, and all of that kind of stuff. People like me don't have to do that because we've got talent. Now, that makes people who have to work really hard in order to achieve the same ends sometimes really jealous. But I just think it's like, bro, we're all contributing to the same thing, are we not? It doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody, and it doesn't mean that I'm standing above anybody else by having more listeners or more subscribers or anything. None of that really actually matters. All they are is like little signatures that you probably might be doing something right if you've got somewhat of an audience. And I think that we've kind of become possessive of the people that we listen to. We feel that we've had a part in the creative process because we listen to a show, because we comment on it, because we follow them on Facebook, because we're a part of the Facebook groups, because we follow them on Twitter and that kind of thing. But there's a difference between that level of interaction that you can get through social media. Now you can really reach the people who are the commentators or anything. And I'm still reachable on Facebook. I stay pretty much up to date with all of my messages and comments and things that I get. But I'm rather terrible with the email and the Skype and the you know, there's just too many forms of communication, honestly, to keep up to date with every one of them. So for me, it's just Facebook. I get up in the morning and I do my Facebook and everything. That's where I share all my shows around and such and blah blah blah. But that means I'm far more interactive with people than a lot of, say, the guests that I get on my shows, or a lot of the other hosts that are on other networks, because they operate in a world of email, phone calls, that sort of thing. Now, part of being a radio show host is about criticism, because if you're saying anything at all, you can say the sky is blue and you'll be criticized for it. All right, people will say, there's more important things to talk about. And they'll say that same comment on anything. You could talk about vaccines, you could talk about chemtrails, you could talk about political corruption, any topic whatsoever, and there'll always be one guy saying, there's other more important stuff going on out there. Well, that's great, bro. Why don't you go and pay attention to that one very important thing that you think is actually worth your time, and I will focus on the things that I actually think are worth my effing time. Is that a deal? You know, I mean, are we on different planets? We're not. We're on the same freaking planet. Are we capable of comprehending every single thing that's going on the planet at any one time? No, because it's too freaking big. There's too many people, too many forms of consciousness, and too many events, too much history, too much science, too much geology, too much knowledge for any one person to have it all. Or for any one person to get everything about it right, isn't there? Nobody's got a monopoly on the truth, do they? So, how do you find out what the truth is? Well, sometimes you don't know. And that requires you to research, rather than mindlessly parrot stuff that you haven't properly checked yet. Or if you do, it's like I always say, even a desert of lies can yield a grain or two of truth. And even if somebody's telling you a story can still be very interesting to listen to, right? And it'll make you think about things. And for a large part, along with the rest of the population, I live in the fantasy realm, you know? Think about movies, that sort of thing, where reality is reduced to an allegory. And I'm starting to see reality this way, because you can look, and this is the principal point of my philosophy, which is fractal scumbaggery. you know what a fractal is? It's a hologram. You can zoom into one part of the hologram and it'll actually start to repeat the exact same look of the entire hologram that you first started zooming in on. And then you zoom in even further and you see that exact same pattern repeating itself endlessly repeating itself. Now, how fractal scumbaggery works is when you start to research, let's say you pick an item of scumbaggery, some form of scumbag like David Rockefeller or something like that. You start looking into David Rockefeller. Then you see that David Rockefeller is part of all of these think tank groups, let's say Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission. And then you start to see that he's got all these oil interests, and there's US Standard Oil, and such and so forth. And then you realize that US Standard Oil helped the Nazis. And then you realize that the think tanks that he's a part of are trying to set up a fascist government in the United States. So it comes full circle. And then you start looking into each and any one of these particular organizations. You have a look at, say, the Trilateral Commission. Then you start seeing all these other names of all these other particular scumbags. And you look into one of those particular scumbags, and you find out that he's linked with all these other particular little groups, and that he's, and all of these little groups are all connected in some way. And then you look into one of those little groups, and you see that it's connected to all these other scumbags and all these other forms of scumbaggery. An endless, infinite, fractal loop of scumbaggery. That is why researching conspiracy stuff can drive you insane, because you're researching something that's insane. All right, these people aren't you know, reasonable, caring, loving fathers and mothers and so on and so forth. These are psychopathic, ritual, child-killing scum. The worst the world has ever seen. These guys have done, you know how the Nazis were the first people to allegedly have industrial-scale human extermination? Okay, well, that's like an advance on the Aztecs, you know, they're just killing people all the time and just tossing them down the pyramids. And then we've figured out a way to industrialize it. And now it's come to another level. The information age followed the industrial age. And now information is what's being used to kill. But it's killing not only our bodies, it's killing our minds. That's why we have so many people in this movement arguing with each other about who did what or who's a shill and who isn't, etc. Because we've lost faith in each other. We've lost faith in humanity because of what we've seen. Because this information does drive you at least a tiny bit crazy because of how crazy it is. The only way to comprehend something that is completely mad is to go a little bit loopy, I think. Sort of like you can't look into hell sometimes without hell staring back at you. You can't visit it and come back without a part of it attached to you. And that's why it's inherently dangerous, ultimately. And some minds cannot take it. Some do not have the nutrition, the sleeping habits, or the amount of exercise that is required to have a healthy mind. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect, that I got everything all figured out. The man who thinks he knows everything clearly knows nothing. The man who thinks he doesn't know much clearly knows enough.
Well, let's go back to Nazis, because you know, with the fractal scumbaggery that you were describing, it made me think of, you know, how in the truth movement we're looking at some longtime people that we've listened to that are starting to put out like stuff like, well, Hitler wasn't such a bad guy. So that's enough to drive you crazy too, if you've been listening to a certain host or whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, they start talking about Hitler being cool, and you know, what do you think about that?
Sorry, you'll have to restate that. I kind of don't understand.
Well, there's a lot of there's a rise of Nazis in the truth movement right now, and people have been led down this path of truth and followed the fractal scumbaggery, and then it's led right back to the truth movement. So there's a lot of evidence right now that there's certain paths that you can look at, like anti-Zionism, for instance, that, you know, in the dark corners of the internet, you find that it's really just some anti-Jewish pro-Hitler stuff. So have you found that in your travels?
I would say that there are two types of comments that are predominant on my YouTube videos that are caught automatically by the spam filter. The first one being crazed Christian fundamentalists. Not bagging Christians. I like Christians. I just really can't stand crazed Christian fundamentalists. It's a very specific subset. Any of you as a Christian out there, and you go around and you love people, you actually practice the word of Jesus and everything like that, you're good people. Love you. But if you're going around hating people, telling them they're going to go to hell and abusing them and that kind of thing, not exactly Jesus-like. And the second group is the neo-Nazis. It's the Jews. Now, sure, let's have a look at the facts here. There are a lot of people who are technically of Jewish descent who happen to be scumbags. However, there's about 96% of the quote-unquote Jewish population descending from the 12 different tribes of Israel, only one of those tribes being Semites, who aren't psychopathic criminal scum with billions of dollars. So I think genetics doesn't have an awful lot to do with it. I think bloodline does. And if somebody's actually in one of these families, then it's a different story. But these people aren't going to synagogues. They're not practicing Yom Kippur or any of these other things. They're Satanists masquerading as Jews. Now, what does Jew mean? Well, what does Zionism mean? Well, what does Semitism mean? Okay, well, let's think about this. Let's say you're British or English or Anglo-Saxon, for example. You'd call that a race, wouldn't you? You'd call the Anglo-Saxons a race. White people, in other words. Now, would you call a white person a Catholic? No? Well, because Catholicism's a religion, right? Judaism's a religion, and if you are a Catholic and you follow Catholicism, you're called a Catholic. And if you're a Jew and you follow Judaism, you're a Jew. Pretty straightforward. In terms of race, however, a Semite is a form of race. There's several, you know, quote-unquote Jewish races, Ashkenazi and a whole bunch of others. And what people are starting to do, and this is the classic human mistake, and it's happened all the way throughout history, is oversimplification of the matter. All right? It's everything's one way or everything's the other way. Well, how about if everything's BS and you're being deceived about everything in your entire life? That's the start-off point, bro. It isn't, I hate the Jews and I'm going to go around exposing them. It isn't, I hate the Zionists and I'm going to go around exposing them. It's, I hate scumbaggery, and I'm going to go around exposing it. And anybody who gets accused of scumbaggery, who's not actually guilty of it, can, you know, suffer adverse side effects, and it's kind of immoral and nasty to do that unless you've got all your ducks lined in a row. Yep, I know this person's a scumbag because they've done X amount of stuff that I can prove. Pretty straightforward. Whereas the neo-Nazi contingent is like a rebirth of the Hitler movement. Now, there's a number of different signs, warning signs of fascism, and one of them is, you know, an obsession with crime and punishment and trying to get everybody connected with each other and bring people together through a mutual hate of another group of people or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. The neo-Nazi elements in the truth movement, I feel they're often irrational and abusive, cruel, malevolent, lacking in empathy, and also a little bit retarded. to an extent, right? And again, like I said, like I mentioned with the crazy fundamentalist Christians, there it's a specific subset of that one belief structure, a cult, if you will, within a belief structure. And then you have the cult of neo-Nazis within the truth movement. Now, people might actually be surprised to know that fascism is corporatism, okay? It's about companies taking control of everything, okay? So that's basically what it is. And people don't realize that the Nazis were national socialists, so they're just into socialism. Now, neo-Nazis have no idea of this. They think that fascism is freedom. They think that authoritarianism is going to give everybody a better life. They think that extermination is going to free up valuable resources and time for humanity to expand and grow in different directions that were never possible before, to allow a super race to come forth and rule the earth in a dominion of peace and tranquility that will last 1,000 years. Now that sounds real nice, but it also sounds freaking nuts! Yeah, my God! Bro, for F's sake, practice what you preach. If you're talking about going out there and killing all the Jews and everything, why haven't you done it yet? Okay? Because you're a freaking coward. Alright? Ultimately, that's the end of the day. If you're going to sit around saying a whole bunch of stuff and never actually do anything to affect the things that you're talking about, then you're just a freaking coward. Alright? I'm not encouraging anybody to kill anything. What I'm saying is, if you aren't willing to kill anybody, stop freaking talking about killing people. Especially just because they were born into a particular set of parents with a particular genetic code. You know, that alone is not enough to judge somebody's character and to be able to weigh their life in the balance and be able to make a decision about whether or not they deserve life. That decision does not belong to you. That decision belongs to no man. And this is the inherent insanity of it. They believe that human life is a commodity. And because certain people are treating it as a commodity, like the elite, and use us as their slaves, that it gives them moral authority to treat them as a commodity, to dehumanize them. And incidentally, dehumanization, to say that somebody's a filthy Jew or something like that, to say Gerald... Koskowitz or whatever the hell, or Gerald Goldberg, somebody with a Jewish sounding name is automatically a scumbag because he's got a Jewish sounding name, because he's got some kind of he's got a bigger nose than usual. Oversimplification, mate. For simple minds do not question; they follow. Whoever is leading them has a sophisticated mind, not a kind, forgiving, caring, leadership-based mind. Leadership is about sacrifice. Leadership is about protection. Leadership is about living your existence specifically for others, service to others. That is what leadership is. It's not about glitz and glamour. It's about getting your hands dirty, taking responsibility for the actions of other people under your command. So if you are one of these leaders of this neo-Nazi movement, then you hold a certain amount of culpability and responsibility for these sorts of ideas being propagated. I'm not talking censorship. I just don't listen to it. I just don't agree with it. I've done my research. I've looked into it, and if somebody knows something that I don't, if Hitler was like a real snuggy bear, you know, just after a few whiskey sours or something like that, they go, "Oh man, you know what I'm gonna do for you, Hitler, bro? You've been so good to me tonight. I'm gonna give you patented U.S. Standard Oil products so that you can get your Luftwaffe off the ground. It's gonna be great, you know." If people don't believe me, yes, the Luftwaffe is the German Air Force for the those of you who don't speak Reich, which means German. No, I'm kidding. US Standard Oil, Rockefeller Corporation, actually gave additives that were patented to the German Air Force without which they could not have flown. Okay? They could have won the war by simply withdrawing their products and not trading with the enemy. They could have shortened it by years. They could have saved tens of millions of lives just by starving the enemy out of their resources. And the people who laundered the gold and got all the raw resources into Germany during the time of the war were Americans. Specifically, Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush's father, George W. Bush's grandfather. They were laundering money, Nazi gold, and providing iron and explosives and like 50 other different raw materials and resources, in some cases up to 30 to 50% of the Nazi war effort came from Americans. They built those concentration camps connected to American railway lines. They built them with American money. And then they sent American soldiers in there to die fighting the American-financed German troops. And you want to support that? If you're supporting Nazi Germany, you're supporting the current American regime. Because after the war, after all these discoveries with all of this American money, after all these mind-controlled experiments, the angels of death, and goodness knows who else, they all got clipped and transported into operations elsewhere. Often in the United States, CIA mind control programs, MKUltra, NASA, you name it. And just like it says in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, there it has stayed. And there Hydra has grown, a beautiful parasite inside America. And I believe the Nazi regime now controls America. Piece by piece, they've reassembled the Reich, and they're so using
they didn't actually lose the war,
they just changed venues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you can't beat them, join them.
So you don't sound real worried about any type of white genocide going on.
Well, I mean, whites should be worried about genocide just as much as blacks should be, just as much as Asians should be. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, who isn't worried about getting genocided?
Sure.
You know? It's like, it's okay, genocide doesn't affect me. I'm immune to bullets, bro. You know? My government would never exterminate me for my political beliefs, really. So every extermination throughout history isn't good enough proof of that, is it? You know, the frickin' Khmer Rouge in Cambodia exterminated you if you were so much as wearing glasses because they thought you might be an intellectual. Okay, you will be killed for your beliefs. And you know what's the most interesting thing about fascism? The most interesting thing of all. Those people who are in the positions of power and influence and knowledge behind a Nazi regime, once they get it in there, fascist regime more specifically, they get killed by their own leaders. And then their leaders eventually get killed and replaced by their underlings. Okay? So, best case scenario, if you're a fascist pig, you get your dictatorship. It's going to be lovely. And you'll enjoy it for about 5 minutes before the people you love so much and help to get into power come knocking at your door and exterminate you and your families so that you won't be around to resist them once they start to do things outside of the promises they made to you. Nazi Germany made a lot of great things for the German people. They made the VW, the people's car, which people still enjoy today. They made the Autobahn, which was the largest highway, I think, at the time. It's for moving ground forces, mate. All of these things that you seem to enjoy, that you seem to get promised by a government, any government, fascist or not, will be taken away from you, will be implemented in a way that you don't like somewhere down the track. The first thing they need is your consent. Second thing they need is your support. If you support them, if you consent to them, then you'll never be able to support or give consent to anything that they don't tell you to ever again until you have a violent revolution to oust these people, because these people do not listen to reason. They do not listen to empathy. They do not listen to any better part of their humanity. They will only listen to a bullet. And that is the worst kind of thing that you could ever hope to happen in your country. Blood in the streets. American versus American. I hope that such a future does not happen. But I fear that I'm wrong. I think that it will. And it will be tragic the day that it does. And I feel that I have a little bit of a personal duty to do whatever I can in my limited capacity to help stop that from happening. And if that means making obscure, crappy puns and jokes on the Vinnie Eastwood show so that people laugh and release that tension, and also you'll notice that the people around you not laughing, they're the Nazis.
There you go.
Nazis are not known for their sense of humor, son. Well, thank you, Kira. I think we're up on the show now, aren't we?
We are out of time. I've really enjoyed talking to you tonight, and I'll talk to you again sometime. We're going to leave it with a victory song.